It's the Popmatic Podcast for March 4th, 2015. I got it right. Do I get a gold star?
Yes.
On this episode, we rock you like a hurricane. You're listening to the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Mike.
Bill.
Jeremy.
And we're going to rock you like a hurricane, or a tornado, as the case may be, because it is Severe Weather Preparedness Week, or last week was.
It should be every week, guys.
That's true. But like many southern cities and their consolidated metro and county governments, I'm not going to mention anyone by name, usually our response to severe weather is like...
panic. Suddenly all the bread and milk
That's
disappeared.
About right.
I was going to...
Red!
I'm sorry. No.
Lock up your families. Lock up your kids. Lock up your wife.
For the love of God, here it comes! Bread!
One snowflake has hit the ground. My mind is melting out of my ears.
How am I going to make French toast without eggs and bread and milk?
My joke was going to be that
it's all going to get cut out.
Southern cities' responses are often a week late to severe weather, so it's appropriate that we would do our Severe Weather Preparedness Week episode a week after. Amanda, you should go first because you're the one, like...
I'm the weather geek.
Certifiable weather geek.
Yes.
And I was going to ask you if weather geeks, do they have a name? Do they identify as a group? Do they say, I'm a weather geek?
Yes, we do.
No. And,
like, I've taken Storm Spotter classes.
Yes.
And I have the National Weather Service phone number in my phone. So if I spot weather, I've never actually called in because I've never... You have to have, like, hail that's, like, a half an inch or bigger, like, smaller than that. They're like, we don't care. So it'll be okay. So...
Do you call yourself weather geeks, or is there, like, another name?
We're weather geeks, I think. I mean, there's also the Storm Spotter community, but
so that's, Storm Spotter.
That's not as catchy.
That's as catchy as Severe Weather Preparedness Week.
Yes.
Do you own a copy of Twister?
Yes.
Well, duh.
Do you call your car the Dorothy 2?
I do not.
Yeah, I heard there was a found footage movie last year where they went inside a tornado.
They've had some people that have actually been hit, like the... I could talk all day.
I think we're jumping the shark a little bit.
Yeah.
Amanda, you as the certifiable weather geek have the honor of going first.
Well, good, because I'm going to talk about my favorite weather book. And it is by Eric Larson. It's called Isaac's Storm. It is about the 1900 Galveston hurricane. And in 1900, Isaac Klein was the chief meteorologist at the Galveston office of the U.S. Weather Bureau. At the turn of the century, Galveston was this massive growing city. It was this glittering gem on the Gulf. They kind of referred to themselves as the Wall Street of the Gulf. You know, resident, it was kind of like this, you know, little resort town. And they had seen their neighbors have issues with some storms. And they're like, hey, maybe we should put up a seawall on the Gulf because that would be protection. And for some reason, in 1891, Klein had written an article in the Galveston Daily News when they were talking about this, and his official meteorological opinion about the thought of a hurricane ever doing any serious damage to Galveston was, and I quote, a crazy idea or an absurd delusion. Like, for some reason, he had it in his mind that it couldn't happen. And so basically, they just were like, okay, we won't build a wall. So, as we all know, that didn't work in their favor. And actually, in 1900, it was kind of a weird year of weather. There was a heat wave that gripped the nation and killed lots of people in New York and Chicago. There was a plague of crickets in Waco. The Bering Glacier started to shrink, and Galveston got a ton of rain, and so all these weird things are happening. But then in September 8th to be specific, they were having a big party. The weather was nice. The kids were out playing in the rising water because, you know, no hurricane's going to come. Let's go have a party. Everybody had gone to the beach because the waves were really huge and the sky was gorgeous and pink, and then all of a sudden, the surf started ripping apart the beachfront. It kept getting closer and closer. And so that was the night that the hurricane actually hit. And it was basically, they've categorized it now, they've gone back, because the Saffir-Simpson scale did not exist when the storm came through and categorized it as a Cat 4. Which, just for comparison, Hurricane Katrina was only a Cat 3 when it hit. It had 145 mile per hour winds estimated because the highest measure was 100 mile per hour, but then the anemometer blew off the building. So, you know, I hate when that happens. And basically, they estimate between 6,000 to 12,000 people died. They're not even sure how many died because they got washed to sea. Galveston at that point was about 9 feet above sea level, and the storm surge came in at 15. So you can imagine that there was a lot of swimming happening that day, including Klein's pregnant wife. She was killed in the storm as well. He did manage to save his other three children, and his brother was there with him as well. The Galveston hurricane actually remains to this day the deadliest natural disaster. It killed more people than the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and the Johnstown flood combined. Uh-huh. And just, again, to put it in perspective, Hurricane Katrina had 1,800 death toll. And so we're talking, they say that 8,000 is about the number they settle on usually. Klein wrote a biography in which he had claimed to run across the beachfront saying, "Hey, the hurricane's coming, get away." They've never found an eyewitness to testify to that, so they think that that's just kind of his story. But what he did do was issue a hurricane warning without official confirmation from the Weather Bureau. And they argued if he had waited for confirmation that thousands more may have died because some people were able to get across the bridge to safety. Because I think Galveston at that time had 36,000 people living there, so we're still talking a huge chunk of their population. After his life, Klein moved to New Orleans, or after the hurricane, he moved to New Orleans and worked in the Weather Bureau there for years. He ended up writing several books about hurricanes, and he also picked up the hobby of writing about artists and artwork. Actually, Klein has a Tennessee connection. He was born here in Madisonville in East Tennessee in 1861, which is cool. And I really liked Eric Larson's book. Like, he's a very journalistic writer. He's very fact-based, but he still tells a good story within that framework. And he actually has a new book that will be out on March 10th called Dead Wake, and it's about the last crossing of the Lusitania. And I'm not sure that I will read that, but I do like Eric Larson. You just know it's not going to end well.
Spoiler alert.
The book about the Galveston hurricane, you know, that's not going to end well either.
That's true.
I will say it about Eric Larson, he can take any topic and make it amazing.
Yeah, he really has written about a wide range of...
Yeah. He can take any topic and write a good book. Like, it'll read like a novel.
Yeah. So this was actually, I think this was the second book of his I read. I read The Devil in the White City first, and then I read this one, and this one has always stuck out in my brain as a high-quality read.
My problem is I was going to confuse the Eric Larson of The Savage Dragon.
I was going to make a Savage Dragon joke, and I thought...
Only me and Jeremy will find that joke.
Yeah, I got that joke. I just didn't think it was that.
Oh,
hugs and kisses.
What you got, Mike?
Well, I got nothing for you. Today I thought I'd talk about bring it all back to boring history. Yay!
I like history.
History's the best. So one of the things that side genre, whatever, many genres of history that I think is kind of neat is the influence of, like, random events. Sometimes, you know, I like to read books about, like, diseases in history, you know, like, apparently Napoleon was so plagued with gout that he was distracted while during the Battle of Waterloo that he couldn't get off his horse. It was like, you know, his legs hurt so much. So, like, you know, maybe he could have done better if his mental powers were fully focused on that. But another example, of course, is the weather. Ooh, so today I thought I'd talk about a book called The Little Ice Age, How Climate Made History from 1300 to 1850 by Brian Fagan. It begins with what is called the medieval warm period. You know that whole, that old joke about, like, you know, Leif Erikson's called the icy hellscape Greenland, while they also called the slightly less icy hellscape Iceland.
And those Vikings, they were funny.
Chuckle. But if you didn't laugh, you got an axe to the head. Well, before 1200, Greenland actually wasn't that bad. It was, you know, a pretty nice place to be. They used it as springboards to go into Canada. You know, Northern Europe, less icy. The Vikings were free to spread across Northern Europe to England, Normandy, and Kiev, and I believe Constantinople. And then, you know, the Normans would invade England and Sicily and such. But when things cooled down, the Vikings basically just withdrew back to the frigid, icy Northland. The Little Ice Age is kind of like the polar opposite of global warming, where, you know, global warming has, like, you know, erratic and crazy weather, but things tend to be warmer, while in this case, crazy erratic weather, but things tend to be much, much colder. There's some pretty neat stuff claimed in the book, like, you know, the Spanish Armada was repelled with the help of the weather, which Fagan credits to the Little Ice Age. New fishing boats were adapted to go farther and farther out to sea to collect more fish. And this is credited, supposedly, with why the Vikings decided to go to Finland. the fish that they were going after was is cod, which we actually have a book called Cod, A Biography of the Fish That Changed the World. not that boring. I read it. And
the author of that book, do you remember his name?
Mark Kurlansky.
Mark Kurlansky. He wrote awesome.
He wrote Salt.
Mm-hmm. He wrote Salt, but he wrote
the... I was going to read that.
Yeah, I mean read that.
Awesome book that he read. It's almost kind of related to what you're talking about, though, because it's like kind of like hidden history that you don't know about.
Yeah,
yeah. The Basque history of the world.
Oh, yeah, I mean read
is,
that.
Oh, man, that book is amazing.
Ooh,
yeah,
okay.
So, okay.
I'll try that out. And lastly, one of the factors of the French Revolution, supposedly, is that over the course of that 600 years, that the agriculture in many of the countries of Europe, like, changed to reflect how the temperature was getting, like, friggin' cold, and they would, like, you know, stock up for the long winters and such. But the French never did, because the aristocrats didn't give a crap about what the peasant thought, you know. Yeah, whatever. You know, millions of peasants died of famine. Whatever. They can eat cake. This didn't really matter much until 1788, at the start of the French Revolution and, you know, the rise of the three estates and such. So it's a really short book, really easy to read, fun stuff, lots of pictures.
Well, I was reading something about the Little Ice Age, too, just recently, randomly, for some reason. And they said, too, that that's why the Vikings pulled back out of, after being in, like, Newfoundland and whatever, wherever they found that. That's why they pulled back, is because it got so cold.
Right.
They're like, we're too far from home, and it's cold, so we'll go home. And so that's why we're not all
Spens
and Leafs. And
because they found, like, a settlement there.
Yeah, they've since proven that they were there before Mr. Columbus.
What do you got, Bill?
Start out with a bit of dialogue. Ned. How's the cop business, Oscar? Oscar replies, real good. Always starts hopping in the weather like this. When it gets this hot, people always try to kill each other. Of course, I'm talking, well, maybe not of course, but I'm talking about the 1981 neo-noir Body Heat, written and directed by Lawrence Kasdan, starring William Hurt, Kathleen Turner, and Richard Crenna. The reason I'm talking about Body Heat is, well, it has heat in the title, and I'm for anything that's hot at this time of year.
Amen.
In Body Heat, the weather is another character. The heat, plus a not-so-bright lawyer, plus a married femme fatale, and you've got some explosive ingredients for murder.
Dun, dun, dun.
The movie is a textbook for writing a great screenplay. It creates an atmosphere that trouble is coming. So heat up in this cold weather with Body Heat. It's got a great score by John Barry. Good supporting character actors. Ted Danson, Mike's favorite from Creepshow. Gotta mention Creepshow. It's not a podcast without Creepshow.
All right. Oh, boy. I like this trend.
Mickey Rourke and J.A. Preston. Also, very briefly, I missed last week's podcast because of this crappy weather. And that we were going to talk about shorts. And my short actually fits into this podcast. I'm a big fan of the writer Irwin Shaw, and his book, Irwin Shaw, Short Stories, Five Decades, has a short story in it called The Girls in Their Summer Dresses. Once again, it has summer in it, not winter dresses, but summer dresses. And it's really a great short story, just 3,211 words. It gives a very brief synopsis of a marriage and where this marriage is going, so I highly recommend this short story. And also Irwin Shaw's Short Stories, Five Decades. Like I say, he's not talked about enough. You know, people talk about Cheever, Updike, but I put Irwin Shaw right in there with those cats. Jeremy?
The recent weather that we've suffered through puts me to mind of what a horrible place Antarctica might be. I've never been there, probably like most people, but it seems like my kind of idea of a nightmare. It's there's interplanetary cold. The temperature there is something like the temperature at equatorial Mars. There are long stretches of darkness, and there are people there and research bases or whatever, and it's the same people staring at you every day. It sounds like a frozen high school.
Sounds like work.
Yeah, well, and like Body Heat, it's inevitable. Someone is bound to start killing people. So
not yet.
At work, you mean?
I'm sorry.
Is that a threat? Do I need to fill out a form?
I hope you're not recommending Whiteout.
I am recommending Whiteout.
Oh, is the comic book better, or is it the movie?
It's the comic book.
The movie's terrible.
That's why I will mention that.
Oh,
I've not
sorry.
Seen the movie. Let me back up. Okay, Antarctica must be hell. And it made me think of Greg Rucka and Steve Lieber's 1998 comic Whiteout, which is the story of U.S. Marshal Cary Stetco, a kind of prototypical cop with a past,
who's been banished to the ice. And when she's not spouting the text of treaties, Carrie's earning a reputation as a hard-nosed, no-nonsense cop, and her tough-as-nails persona, not to mention a violent history that she has, makes the ice's rumor mills churn like a middle school homeroom. The story opens on a body found frozen in the ice, its face mangled beyond all recognition, and from there, Stetco and a British intelligence agent named Lily Sharp untangle a mystery while trying to not lose too many digits in the bitter cold. This is a black and white comic, and reading it really kind of puts you into the world of the Antarctic research stations. They're walking across kind of short stretches between buildings on a guideline, and because there are whiteout conditions, it's the title. If you go away from that, you could get lost very easily and die mere feet away from a door that you're trying to find. So that's kind of a terrifying kind of feeling. And every page kind of screams to me, like, leave this frosty hell. And it just makes me kind of want to get out of it. There's a sort of a paranoid feeling, too, because everything there is dependent on the weather. You kind of can't do anything without considering the weather. That just makes me seize up and want to crawl into a hole. And there's also sort of a bit of The Thing in there, too, like the sort of killer on the loose, which it's been a while since I've seen The Thing, but it's not really a comparison, but still, it made me think of it. Now, the book spawned a couple of sequels, as well as a 2009 film starring Kate Beckinsale and Tom Skerritt's mustache. It was a critical and commercial bomb.
That's my favorite movie. I love that movie.
It's Brian's favorite movie.
I watch that movie every day.
He really loves the audio commentary by Jay Leno. This was...
I deserved it.
This was right. He likes to eat Doritos and watch Whiteout. This was writer Greg Rucka's first foray into the world of comics after previously having some success as a novel. He's written Batman and Superman and tons of stuff. And he's also writing another, he's currently writing a creator-owned series called Lazarus, which tickles my fancy, something fierce.
Yeah, that's good.
And here's a fun fact. The copy of Whiteout that I checked out from our public library is signed by both the writer and the artist. So check out. I'm not going to say check it out again.
You mentioned The Thing, and that's based on a short story called Whose Goes There by John W. Campbell.
Yep. Yes.
We have this short story in some collections of short stories in our collection. So I just wanted to give a shout out to that.
Yeah, good story.
Radical. So the first thing I want to talk about is not a library thing, but it's free for everyone. That is the Nashville Severe Weather Twitter account, and that's at Nash Severe WX. I wonder if do you follow them, Amanda?
I don't have them on the Twitter. I don't do Twitter, but I follow them on my Facebook page.
Okay, because they are constantly give updates about weather, and they're really funny. Well, they're as funny as you can be about severe weather. Like, so,
hey, we're all going to die.
Well, like, if you want...
Don't be an asshole.
If you want, weather updates that are, like, always really timely and witty and sometimes a little snarky, at Nash Severe Weather is a good one to follow.
That's no lie.
So the thing that you can get from the library they wanted to talk about was the film The Station Agent. Now, what does this have to do with weather? Just trust me.
Peter Dinklage is in it, who's in Game of Thrones, and winter is coming.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
That was a good circle.
Jumping the shark, spoiler alert, whatever.
Sorry. There's that, but that's not where I was going to go.
I'm sorry.
But Peter Dinklage is in it, and he plays this man who's obsessed with trains, and his boss, who owns the little hobby shop where he works, dies, and he's his one friend in the world. So he wants to go and live alone in an abandoned train station, right, and just indulge his love of trains. But he meets Joe, who runs a hot dog stand, but his father is ill. And he meets Olivia, who has recently been divorced. And they're sort of stuck in this little small town. And even though they don't really have anything in common, they become friends. And they hang out, and it's this little dramedy about their weird relationship. Now, the Peter Dinklage character, Finbar, he really loves trains. And he shares his love of trains with Joe and Olivia. And in the movie, one of the things that they start doing is they start train chasing, so like they go out with a video camera and like follow trains in a truck, and ooh. I think
and it's like storm chasing but with less hail,
and it's like storm tracing but with less hail. Now this is
train spotting with less heroin
and more hobos.
So this is why I bring this up, because every time I think about tornadoes and we talk about the movie Twister, I just always think about this movie, even though it's not about storm chasing. Because they go train chasing, it's like linked in my brain. So, like,
wow, that is some crazy
tangent.
That's
a stretch even for me.
Yeah, I know.
I
like,
love it.
Yeah, but, wow.
I mean, I love it.
Jeremy's whipped out some weird stuff before, but I think you've really, like, you know, taking the crown and the Change It Hall of Fame.
Really, anything could be about the weather because yeah. We all live in the weather, you know?
I think that's great. Whenever we're going to do this topic, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And I was like, I don't care. I'm just going to bust it out, right?
If you wanted to
see Peter Dinklage before he was a household name, the station agent, Patricia Clarkson is in it too, and I've always had a crush on her.
She's great, yeah.
So, when did that come out? The station agent came out in
10 or 12.
2003.
Michelle Williams is in it, and she works in a library.
Oh. Hey, library connection. That's
cool. Yeah. Yes, I mean, I'm recommending it because it's a good film that's worth your time, not just because sure. In my head sure. I associate it with weather chasers, but okay.
I've wanted to see it for a long time because I was talking to Crystal about him, about Peter Dinklage, and I like him a lot in anything that I see him in, and I think it's he's great in Elf. He's great in Game of Thrones. And
he's good in Bruges, too.
I don't know if we have them in the collection, but I highly recommend Find Me Guilty, where he plays a lawyer. And Sidney Lumet hired him just to.
Vin Diesel?
Vin Diesel. Yeah. He's excellent in it. And also, I recommend Living in Oblivion, which is a independent film about independent filmmaking. And he has this. Hilarious, where he's an angry actor, and it's the reason why they hired him because he's a dwarf, and it's just a scream.
The station agent was directed by who? Tom McCarthy. Now, he was in another sci-fi movie, a classic, 2012. He had, as an actor, he had a bit part. Okay, another.
But John, is that John?
Typical weather movies that are more about weather and bad weather besides 2012, because maybe the station agent didn't have anything to do with weather. The Day After Tomorrow.
That's a good right? one. Sharknado.
Has a library in it.
Sharknado 2 is better, I think.
Sharknado 2, the second one.
Yeah.
Okay, The Road, okay? Something happens. Mm-hmm. The Ice Storm. No, I know all about that. Okay, The Perfect Storm. The Beasts of the Southern Wild was about, Hurricane Katrina. Mm. Encounters at the End of the World. This is for sure what I thought you were going to talk about after you gave your little intro, which is Werner Herzog's documentary about the people who live in Antarctica. Oh. Right?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Great movie. He does something really amazing. That's like an underrated movie of his. When the Levee Breaks, Mike Leigh's documentary about Hurricane Katrina. And let's go way back. Nanook of the North. Let's go to the future. Snowpiercer. No one talked about Snowpiercer?
Next month at the Belcourt, they're showing The Great Flood. Silent film.
Exactly. And then...
Noah.
The Johnstown Flood?
I think so.
Darren Aronofsky movie.
And then why not do, a book. The Worst Hard Time by Timothy Egan. His great book about the Dust Bowl. Much like to Eric Larson, just to bring it home, he's a nonfiction guy. When he writes about stuff you might think is boring, it reads like a novel. Good stuff. And at the beginning, I made jokes about the city responding a week late to severe weather. But I do want to sincerely thank everyone in the electric department, everyone in the water department, everyone in public works for going out in the ice hell and cleaning things up. All the MTA drivers that drove when no one else would drive to make the city run. And when everyone else was home eating hot chocolate and French toast, they were out in those horrible conditions working. So thank you very much for keeping our city alive during that time. Good. 10 minutes for Tickling My Fancy.
So Tickling My Fancy to sort of as a remedy for the ice hell that we all went through, I watched a movie on an iPad for the first time in my life. It was available on Hoopla, and this was a movie that I wanted to see as a child but never got to see. And can you guess what it is? You can't guess what it is. I'm not giving you any hints. It is the 1987 classic Back to the Beach, starring Annette Funicello and Frankie Avalon.
I really enjoyed that when I was age appropriate.
I desperately wanted to see this movie when it came out, but I lived in a town that didn't have a movie theater. My parents did not take me to the movies. The last movie I saw in the theater, I think, was like the He-Man and She-Ra movie, and then I saw Home Alone. So whatever the stretch was between those films. I saw movies occasionally on a VCR if we rented one from the video store, but I didn't see one. So I really wanted to see this movie really bad because Pee Wee Herman was in it. He sings the song Surfing Bird, but it just was not meant to be. Now, my wife has long been a fan of this movie, and we've been trying to see it for whatever reason, but we didn't have a copy of it. The library didn't have it. And I figured if I ever did see it, it would just sort of be a barely tolerable nostalgia fest. But in fact, it's pretty funny nostalgia fest. There's kind of subversive stuff in it where Annette, there's like some kind of not dirty jokes, but like sort of soiled jokes. That didn't make any sense.
Whoa, that sounds worse.
They're not filthy. They're just like maybe it's like whatever pants you wore yesterday. They're just like a little funky.
Lightly stained.
Yeah, slightly stained. But they sort of, Annette and Frankie and Annette are sort of, because that sounds better that way, they're sort of poking fun at their legacy, poking fun at beach movies. There's some like 80s cheese in there, and they have like this sort of like punk rock son who's making fun of them and stuff. And then the worst part about it, there's some unnecessary cameos from old sitcom stars like Don Adams, Bob Denver, Barbara Billingsley. But Frankie and Annette are the stars of the show. Also, Lori Loughlin from TV's Full House is in it.
Wow.
And it rules, man. It was a great movie. So it's available on Hoopla, unless you own a copy.
The soundtrack has a track with Stevie Ray Vaughan and Dick Dale.
Yes. Which, Dick Dale and Stevie Ray Vaughan are in the movie, too, in cameos.
Awesome.
It's pretty hilarious. So what is tickling your fancy, Bill?
Okay, I just wanted to talk about two things very quickly. They're related. Our movies at Maine on Saturday, March 14th, 2015, we will be showing Lone Wolf McQuade, starring Chuck Norris and the late David Carradine. Also, I wanted to mention in this, right now on our off-the-shelf podcast, The Legends of Film, we have an interview with the director of Lone Wolf McQuade, Steve Carver. And it's really one of the better interviews we've done. He was probably the nicest and the most giving of his time. When he started the interview, he goes, "Guys, I've set 2 hours of time for you." There was no rush, no anything. So it's like an hour and 5 minutes. I know that's a long time, but if you like movies, so that's posted right now. You can go to the Off the Shelf, and over to the right is the Legends of Film podcast, and he's there. And just one more time, Lone Wolf McQuade is going to be Saturday, March 14th, 2015, 2 p.m. at the Downtown Public Library. Mike.
I'd like to briefly mention that I finished The Best of Corwainer Smith, and it is amazing. I was wondering what the civil rights connection was. There's a story called The Dead Lady of Clown Town, where a group of the underpeople, the genetically modified animals who were turned into a slave race, leave their underground children.
You sold me.
You had me at Clown Town.
You had me at the title, man. Seriously.
There's a story called Alpha Ralpha Boulevard and The Ballad of Lost Camille, which I don't know, these stories like stick in my brain 20 years later. But they leave their underground shelter only to be confronted with a military force. They all preach, we love you. We love you and understand you, humans. And we are just filled with love. And for this, they're beaten to death in front of cameras. Yay. The story is written from a future perspective, almost like a history text. So presumably at some point, the underpeople have gained a measure of freedom, but they, you know, there's another story where he mentions that. But anyway, major thing I was going to mention today was that I was going to mention one of the most amusing articles I read post-Oscar coverage via IO9 on an article that I will send to Brian. Hugh Jackman was inspired by Birdman to never give up being Wolverine till he dies.
Aren't you glad we're all better people?
This is a pretty stunning interpretation of Birdman.
Yeah, that's interesting.
This is like if I had viewed It's a Wonderful Life as a tragic film because in the universe where George Bailey was never born, Donna Reed was a librarian. We're missing a librarian because of you, you selfish jerk.
I want to know what Tim Burton thought about Birdman. That's what I want to know.
Ooh, yeah. That'd be
interesting.
Okay, so I was just going to talk real briefly about a book I just started called American Gun. This is by Chris Kyle. It's a history of the United States and 10 firearms. It's basically 10 stories about history events. Like the first one was the Alamo and the rifle that kind of helped save the day or lose it, if you will. And then they also talk about the Colt revolver and the Spencer repeating rifle that kind of helped win the Civil War for the North. Go Yankees. This is the second book from Chris Kyle, who you may know wrote American Sniper, which was just made into a movie starring Bradley Cooper, which just won an Oscar for sound editing.
But not for fake babies.
But not for fake babies. I don't get why that's fake babies, but...
You should see that clip. That's a pretty fake baby.
I haven't seen the movie either. Okay. I haven't seen that movie, but that fake baby thing is so fake.
You know, I watched the movie. I didn't notice until they brought it up afterwards. I guess I wasn't paying attention.
I guess it's one of those
focusing
things
on
like
what
do,
he was talking.
Yeah, if you see it, out of context, like if I see that movie now, like I will only see that fake baby. If I'd seen it in the theater, I may not have noticed, or I may have, but like it was a fake baby.
Corrections! We have a bunch of corrections. The last winner of the Cordwainer Smith Rediscovery Award was Mildred Klingerman.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
We don't have any of her books, but she seems pretty obscure, so I'm not going to fault the library for that. IDW does publish some original content, depending on how you view original content. For instance, they put out the Lock and Key graphic novels by Hill. Cash Cow. So things like that. And they also buy or republish properties, but have been published by other people first a lot, like Empire comic that was published by other people. And I think they acquired everything on Top Shelf, which is
they bought
a lot
Top
of
Shelf.
Stuff.
Top Shelf is huge.
Yeah, including the March series by John Lewis. And the other correction was the biography of James Tiptree Jr., is called James Tiptree Jr., The Double Life of Alice B. Sheldon by Julie Phillips. The library does have a copy. And that's the end of my personal corrections. I guess the Klingerman one was yours. But, Mike, do you have some more?
Yeah, at the beginning you said it was 2014 again. Don't you know that we're in 2013 by now?
Oh!
And I could not find confirmation that Captain America / Steve Rogers was actually shot in the head. But he did get shot at least once by Crossbones and multiple times by a brainwashed Sharon Carter. Apparently, Carter's bullets hinged his mind from time, much like in Slaughterhouse-Five.
Oh. Did he go to Dimension Z then?
I think it was before Dimension Z.
Okay.
I'm kind of curious to actually read the comic because I couldn't find any how he came back to life.
Yeah. But those are, I think, Ed Brubaker wrote those.
Yeah, he's supposed to be. He's amazing at other things.
He's amazing. And I've read some of his Captain America stuff prior to him being shot, and they're all pretty good.
Cool story, bro. Do you have another correction?
That would be it.
All right. Any Oscar corrections? We intentionally ignored the Oscars the same way we did with the Grammys. Now, this is going to post 2 weeks after the Oscar ceremony, so we don't want to spend maybe too many times, but I'm going to say that the people that I wanted to win won. Other people I kind of don't care about.
I have a question. Did any of you guys see Big Hero 6?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
It does not deserve an Academy Award.
I got the impression that it was maybe a flop, maybe not a flop, but not the Big Hero movie that they were expecting it to be. And to me, I immediately thought, and was it last week or 2 weeks ago that we were talking about conspiracies? I immediately thought, they're stroking Marvel because it's a Disney Marvel deal. Like, they're stroking Marvel because they know that, like, that's what's propping them up. I don't know. I didn't see any of those movies, so I can't, I'm not making a judgment on any of them, but the impression that I got was that Big Hero 6 was not.
If I had to hazard a guess, you know, because, you know, once it's nominated by the people who have anything to do with it, but then everybody else votes on it.
Yeah.
They just thought, oh, Disney. Okay, we're just going to do that.
Sure, yeah.
Because, you know, the other four.
They had the Lego movie, like, that was, like, the opening.
It was like
special number. Like, you couldn't even bother to nominate him, but then you have him come in and do the special number?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, seriously?
That's a bone thrower.
That's really lame.
That was not awesome.
And for more information, including your own copy of Citizen...
Citizen 4.
Citizen 4 now.
I was trying to say Big Hero 6, but I was thinking, of course, about the Oscars and Citizen 4. Citizen 4, by the way, was the second most powerful cinematic experience I've ever had at the Bell Court. I recommend it. Regardless of the politics, it's an amazing movie. So for all these movies and more, you can go to www.
Library.
I think there's a dot first after www.
Dot.
Period.
Dot library.
Dot.
Nashville.
Dot.
Org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
What's next week?
Robots!
I'm a robot.
Bots, dude.
If only I could feel.
Computer lover.
Father, why has you forsaken me?
I want to ask a question about a movie. I checked this out years ago, and then we no longer have it. It was a Robert Altman movie called Quintet.
Here's the thing. I've heard that movie was so bad for so long. Yeah. And so we finally got it at the library. And I remember when it came to town, it played for 1 week at the Bell Mead Theater. Yeah. Bye-bye. That's before I had a driver's license. But anyway, it came out, and I thought, well, I'm going to watch this, and I'm just going to give myself. And if you're not in a rush and just give yourself over, it's very engrossing,
yeah.
And the final shot's really incredible. Yeah. I mean, it does have a muddle, but it kept my interest.
But I like the idea of Paul Newman in a frozen sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
Hang on, wait, cool? What? Robert Altman made a frozen sci-fi with Paul Newman?
Yeah.
I've never heard of this film. Yeah. Okay.
Quintet. Somewhere, the game is beginning. Has begun. Pray you win.